There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com. This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 Sports Special.
Live from the VIP area at the 2017 Emirates Airline Dubai Rugby Sevens. Hashtag Run Wild.
Just bringing up to date with what's happening in the football, and it's Chelsea who've taken the lead against Newcastle. Newcastle with the first goal, Gale after 12 minutes, but Eden Hazard after 21. Morata has just scored for the Blues. It's Chelsea 2, Newcastle 1. What's the score in Barcelona? CBR's keeping an eye on this one for us.
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you is currently the score in Barcelona, 1. Celta Vigo 1, 49 minutes played in that game.
Spoke to Tom May a little earlier on about joining Jack's victory in the Invitational, the Legends, the tournament a little earlier on. Well, one man who's, it means so much for him is the man, of course, behind joining Jack, putting it together with his lovely wife, Alexander Johnson, joins us live from our broadcast position. Fella, you did it. You won.
We did it. I'm emotionally shot at the moment. I think we set out to do this 5 years ago. We turned out with a team this year that we thought was capable of doing it. We reduced the age. A real mix of rugby league and rugby union players, stars, and I just felt it was right this year. You know, the real commitment, everything that the lads have been told. You know, we're going to bed at this, we're meeting at the pool at this time to make sure they're right for the game. The dream, to be honest, this year was to make the main field, to go one better and win it, and also with the local guys as well, getting to the final. It's been an enormous day, probably one of the best days of my life, to be honest.
Extraordinary results for joining Jack in the Veterans Tournament, as you said, in the locals as well. What does this mean for you, for Alex, for joining Jack, for Jack?
For Jack to lift the trophy today with myself was something very special. You know, Jack got upset every year when we've been knocked out, you know, really upset. We've had to control the situation, you know, it's been quite difficult. But today, to see his face, to do that, to spread the awareness of Duchenne muscular dystrophy has been big. And I've just said to the local boys there, if we weren't making a difference, then we wouldn't be here doing what we're doing. But big support again from Emirates, Gary Chapman, a big thank you. You know, and we are making a difference. We've just put £1 million into gene therapy, and that trial will take place very soon, and that's the next piece of the puzzle.
Congratulations to joining Jack. It's been a few years coming now. Wonderful for us to talk about so many years and so close, there or thereabouts.
It's a number of wonderful charities.
You've gone.
It's a number of wonderful charities, not just the Joining Jack charity, whether it be the Christina Noble Foundation, whether it be the guys you played in the final, the J9 guys, the Bali Legends. It's just a wonderful thing that all these different organisations can come together, express themselves through sport, camaraderie, as competitive as it is on the field. You're all here to raise awareness for the different programmes, and it's just a wonderful opportunity to do that for all the different very, very worthy causes.
Without a doubt, I mean, this tournament is something that you cannot describe back at home in England. It's an enormous tournament. You know, each day just brings something a little bit different. The game itself is intense, there's no doubt about it. It's very physical. But on top of that, the camaraderie, the affection, the emotion, you know, everyone has got problems that going on in their own lives, and there's some serious diseases out there that need looking at. And we understand that. But, yeah, rugby is an amazing thing. It really is. It pulls people together. And, you know, you've got to give credit for every charity out there, the people that stand up and say, yeah, I'm going to do something. So we respect that.
Quick word for the opposition in the final today, obviously, J9, raising awareness, radio eyeballs for their own foundation as well. Nice to meet them in the final and to come to a gentleman's agreement, play seven minutes aside.
Yeah, I didn't even realise that till after the game. But no, I've just seen Sir Evi now, and you know, like I say, going back to the question before, the respect that's there, the understanding that's there. We're on the field for the same amount of minutes, and we give it everything that we've got. So You know, I think defensively we were very solid today. The league element of, you know, the defensive systems that we played, we put a couple of things in motion. We'd actually not watched J9 play at all this year. We'd kept focused on what we were doing. We had a few things that we needed to sort out. We couldn't just turn up. And we did that. So, the lads have been enormous. Once again, a real good group of players understand why we're here, and they'll continue to support the charity moving forward at home.
You've just won the tournament. Have you started recruiting and thinking about next year? Or you
I saw him in, he was in negotiations with Mike Tindall last night. I saw that. That was going on. There was contract negotiations.
I've asked Mike Tindall to send a video in. I'll have a look at it. There really has got to be an understanding of knowing that where we are going as a charity, as a team. Certainly Mike would fit that as well. We're focused. There was a couple of players I had my eye on this year that I knew would be right for us. We're at the right age. Luke Dawn, Pat Richards, Martin Gleeson. Love rugby. Just, you know, at the age of 35, 36, they still love playing. So, they were right to fit into what we were doing this year. Jason Robinson set out. I remember talking in the Emirates tent last year, and he said to me, we've got to win it next year. We've got to go on the big stage, and that's what we've done. And he's bowed out in an enormous fashion. Incredibly supportive throughout the last few years as well. And we've won it. You know, it's not sunk in yet. We've just won an enormous tournament in front of thousands and thousands of people. So, you know, joining Jack as a charity has just been profiled, has just gone up another level again. So that's great.
I suppose the icing on the cake would have been England beating Australia down in Australia at the Rugby League World Cup. That wasn't to be a little earlier on, but by all accounts, I'm sure the boys and you will have an opportunity to look back at the game a little later, or maybe after a little celebration down here. By all accounts, put up a great fight against Australia in their own backyard.
I've not seen the game. 6-0, is that right?
Yep,
6-0. So I think people would have predicted that would have been a bigger score to Australia. So full credit to England. I think people are questioning the rugby league game at home at the moment. You know, the attendances are starting to dip a little bit, but that's an enormous boost. You know, the likes of Tonga and whoever have played in the rounds coming forward have done extremely well. The game is growing. They just need to hook into now the people that do all the organisation to make sure the game continues to grow. I mean, everybody wants to see a fantastic league and union competition. So enormous respect between both codes. The interconnection now between the league boys going into the coaching roles within the union setups, you know, international level. So I really understand it was good to hear today, to hear the union boys as we were playing say, you know, to play along you side you league lads, and the defensive system that you've got was so comfortable to move out and make the tackles and have that defensive cover on the inside. And that's what league lads are good at, and I think that was evident today both in the semis and the final, that the systems that we played defensively were spot on, and the union people can see that, and they can then bring that into their game, which they have done, to be honest, over the last few years.
Defending champions next year, back for more?
We have to, don't we? Whether I'll be back as a 43-year-old is a different question. You know, the young lads need to step up, as they have done this year. But how could we not be a part of this? I mean, Emirates have been fantastic to us and make this happen. We've got to come back. We've got to come back.
I mean, they've been great supporters of you. They've got you here. They've looked after you down here as well. But anyone that knows the Johnny Jack Tops knows that there are so many logos on it of supporting charities, supporting causes. And I suppose it's thanks to all of them.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I can't list them all now because there's that many on the jersey. But, you know, the Entertainer, Multiplex, Starstone, HAE, Land Rover. The list goes on. My wife's just turning around and pointing at different bits on the shirt as we're speaking. But, yeah, the support is enormous. The charity continues to move forward. And once again, if we weren't making a difference, we wouldn't be here.
Absolutely massive result. Absolutely wonderful result. Couldn't have said how happy I am about this one. Because you've done what you set out. I mean, when we've talked about this in the past, we've set out to get onto the main pitch just for the eyeballs. To get the result on top of that is extraordinary.
It is. It's not sunk in, as I said earlier. I mean, what we're getting now at the moment is a real group of people. The friendships that are developing. Tom, yourself, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, you stepped up and did came to one of our brunches and hosted that. And It was, I think I said to you at the time, over we ended up with Tom Cruise running the show. But no, it's there's a real good connection now with everybody. I've just had a beer with the local boys, and I've told them emotionally what it means for us to make these friendships and to move forward as a charity. So, yeah, we love this place. Great affiliation with Dubai. What a place to live, what a place to be. In this tournament, you can't put into words what it's like out here.
Looks as though the boys are doing a bit of a serious debrief over here, talking tactics for next year, taking on hydration. They'll be in the ice bath shortly. Looks as though they're really taking it pretty serious. But lots of friends and family seem to be here as part of the group as well.
Yeah, there is. There's the wives come along to support, probably for about half the team, but it's always been a real good mix of people that have come out here, and they're never any trouble. They'll do what they're told to do. There's a line in the sand for everything that we're doing. There'll be a curfew. Like I say, we hope we get the pool. A real mix. But on top of that, nobody wants to lose the reputation of what they had from years ago as professional players. So, they're out to do a job. They don't want to let joining Jack down. They certainly don't want to let Jack down. They don't want to let themselves down. So, that works as well.
Don't tell me there's a curfew tonight, is there?
There is. It's 7 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Andy, to you, to Alex, to all the team, congratulations again. Thanks, mate, for everything you've done. Thanks for chatting to us on the phone here in person. I'll let you get back to your team to enjoy it. But again, from all the team at Dubai Eye, from me personally as well, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Congratulations to joining Jack. They are victorious. They beat J9 a little earlier on. We've got plenty more rugby to look forward to at the Emirates Airline Dubai Rugby Sevens. So if you would like to keep up to date with all the latest results, do keep locked here on Dubai Eye 103.8.
This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 Sports Special.
Live from the VIP area at the 2017 Emirates Airline Dubai Rugby Sevens. Hashtag Run Wild.
We're grilling it down here live from the Emirates Airline Dubai Rugby Sevens. If you'd like to get involved, number of ways for you to do that. You can text us on 4001. You can give us a call, 04-423-1010. Better still, get involved online. It's at Dubai iSport if you're on Twitter. Let's get around the ground, shall we? I've got Mark Archer and CVR with me here. We've got Robbie Greenfield and Graham Clues back over on the field. It's just putting the picture of some of the big sports stories of the day and live sports updates as well. Let's start with the football. CBR's watching a couple of early kickoffs for us.
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you, it's half-time at Stamford Bridge, and Chelsea are leading that one 2-1 against Newcastle. Eden Hazard scoring, a Morata and a Gale. And then over in Spain, it's Barcelona taking on Celta Vigo. Barcelona have just scored a goal now. They're leading that one 2-1.
We're going to keep an eye on that one for you. We'll also keep an eye on the other developing sports stories. One big story of the day is, of course, the culmination of the Rugby League World Cup. It was Australia against England. Mark Archer's got the match report on this one for us.
Yeah, congratulations to the Australian Kangaroos. They've won the Rugby League World Cup final 6-0 against England. It's their 11th world title for Australia. They are the dominant team in rugby league. It was a try to Boyd Cordner, and it was a penalty to Cameron Smith, which was the difference between the two teams. Australia, listen to this fact, Australia only conceded 16 points in six matches, so it's fair to say they were the dominant team. A wonderful semi-final last week. We saw Tonga almost snatch an amazing victory over England in that semi-final. So it's a likely end of an era for some of the big Aussie legends, Cameron Smith, Billy Slater, Cooper Cronk. Will they stick around and play for the Kangaroos much longer? That's the big question they're asking themselves down under. But congratulations to the Australian Kangaroos. They are the Rugby League World Cup champions. 6-0 victory against England earlier today over in Australia, Tom.
Let's talk a bit of golf if we can. In fact, we might try and get Robbie involved in the conversation here, because there's been a lot of chat about Tiger Woods, his return to competition. It's been positive as well, CVR.
Yeah, a lot of good chat around Tiger Woods, and everybody's been anticipating this. And Tom, he's actually really playing well. Yesterday, 7 under par. He's driving the ball very well. His putting looked good. So, you know, let's hope that Tiger is back and he's competitive. But as I said, he shot a 68 yesterday. To me, he looked very comfortable. And it seems like this operation, you know, has finally worked. He seems to be over his worst. So, yeah, and I think golf is a much better game with having Tiger back in.
Too early to say about Tiger Woods' return?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's too early. Look, it's a pretty casual, relaxed start to the return of Tiger. Let's see how his swing responds when he's under a bit of pressure. Let's see how his short game is. Give him some time. Let's let him get his just see how he recovers from playing competitive golf. It's been a long time. I think Dubai Desert Classic in February was the last time he teed it up competitively. He's had pretty much, what's that, 10, 11 months off the game. So let's just see how he goes. It's a nice start for him. Good to see that he's put a couple of good subpar rounds together after the first couple of rounds of that Hero World Challenge. But let's just wait and see once he plays some more competitive golf, maybe when he gets returns to the PGA Tour. How's his form when he really has to play some pressure golf, nail some pressure putts, continue to hit the fairway, which has been a big problem for him in recent years. But it's good to see him back on the golf course. I think everyone in the world of golf and the world of sport is happy to see him back returning to the competitive field.
Is Robbie Greenfield happy to see him back on golf courses? Let's get the thoughts now. Robbie joins us live from our broadcast position, overlooking the main pitch down here at the Emirates Airline Dubai Rugby Sevens. We've talked about it a lot, haven't we, Robbie, in recent years. So I suppose it's just good to see the man on a golf course. To see him doing well is a bonus.
First and foremost, Tom, absolutely. It's great to see Tiger back. No matter what shape he's in, he looks healthy to me. He's certainly swinging it a lot better than he did 12 months ago when he made an ill-fated comeback at the same event, which culminated in that withdrawal down at the Dubai Desert Classic after a first round 77 there. Never looked right 12 months ago. He was hobbling around in Dubai when we saw him up person. I've got Graham Clues alongside me now, Graham. And to sort of put Tiger's comeback into context a little bit, that ninth hole he made an eagle yesterday, that there was flashes. I don't want to get carried away, but I can't really help myself. There were flashes of, I won't say the old Tiger, I think that beast is long gone, but he hit a towering drive of about 330 yards. He smashed a three-wood up onto the green, a high towering three-wood at that, and rolled in a 12-foot putt. And there were flashes yesterday of vintage Tiger.
I'm not one of these people who's holding back saying, let's wait and see. He's back. Tiger is back, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, that is bravado.
Because if he turns out not to be back, we've wasted the opportunity to pretend that he is back. So let's just say Tiger is back. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. Yet the way he's walking around, the way he's carrying himself, the way he's swinging, he just looks like a man who is genuinely pain-free. When he told us these stories about being pain-free when he was in Dubai, I remember I was quite near you at the time, and we were kind of, well, he doesn't look pain-free. He doesn't look like a man who's got nothing on his mind to worry about, but he genuinely does now. Tiger is back, Robbie Greenfield.
There you go. You heard it here. I won't say first, because basically most of America is declaring that he's back. I was watching the PGA coverage last night, and unfortunately the side effect of Tiger Woods returning to competition is that we don't really get to see any other golf being played by any other golfers. We see, and to pardon the pun, fleeting glimpses of Tommy Fleetwood. Jordan Spieth as well has been high up there on the leaderboard, and of course the leader himself, Charlie Hoffman, who's 5 strokes clear of Tiger Woods. I saw about 3 shots of Charlie Hoffman. And when it wasn't zooming in on Woods, it was on highlights of shots that Woods had hit about 5 minutes previously. America clearly still has a hang-up with the 14-time major champion, and rightly so. He has defined golf and the way that golf has gone over the past 15 years or so, Graham. But as I say, the boys were just saying, Arch just made the point there, it will really come into sharper focus when Tiger has to return to some form of real competition. And by that, I mean, well, I would imagine the Torrey Pines and the Farmers Insurance Open in January.
Yeah, I guess he can't release any kind of schedule until the Hero is finished and he knows how he's played, and he sits with his people and works out what his schedule's going forward. As soon as he's finished on Sunday in the Bahamas, it's all going to be all guns blazing towards Augusta. That's going to be the focus for the next period of time. That's going to be where he wants to be able to perform. Now, whether that includes a trip out to the Middle East again, I've seen a couple of tweets from like Secret Golf Pros and all that saying perhaps not. Perhaps he's going to bypass the Middle East this year and just stay in the US, try to give his back I don't know, a bit of a break from airplanes and trips and things like that.
As much as I'm sure he'll be travelling by private jet, I think a 20-hour flight over to the Middle East is probably ill-advised given the delicate situation surrounding his return. But that's Tiger Woods. We'll park that conversation there. And that is, I guess that's our tuppence on the great man returning to the game of golf. As far as the rugby is concerned, guys, we have just seen the Northwest Barbars beat the Westville Gryphons in the International Under-19s competition by a score of 24-19. We are currently watching the Speranza 22 against the SA Sevens Academy. This is the International Invitation Final. Again, underlining the fact there are so many matches going on besides just the International Sevens Series. It really is a top-to-bottom display of rugby, Graham. And, you know, there's even these matches, the quality is incredible.
The quality is incredible. And even though perhaps some of the, you know, the majority of the crowd now are waiting to see the international teams come back on, this is the pinnacle for these guys. You know, these haven't even just driven across the UAE. These guys have flown here to be here. This is something that they've all saved up for. They've, you know, got flights, they've got coaches, they've got hotels just to be here for this weekend. So this match for them must mean so much. And as you say, every time you look up, it doesn't matter who's on the pitch, the professional men, the professional women, or the amateurs from the Gulf or the amateurs internationally, the standard is exceptional.
And what a moment it is for them playing in front of this capacity crowd down here at the Seven Stadium. Just looking ahead to the up and coming matches here on pitch one, we've got the 13th place playoff final between Wales and Uganda. That will start at 6:03. The Challenge Trophy final between France and Spain at 6:20. The 5th place playoff final between Samoa and Australia, that one gets underway at 6:44. And then eyes turn to the bronze medal final between England and Fiji. It's at 7:08. And the final itself, South Africa against New Zealand. For my money, South Africa, the heavy favourites in that final to retain their trophy. 7:33, that one gets underway on pitch one. We're keeping an eye on the action here. For now, it's back to you boys over in the booth.
Thank you very much indeed. Robbie Greenfield and Graham Clues watching the action unfold on the pitch. What is the action on the pitch at the moment? CVR?
Yeah, what I can tell you is it's a South African Sevens Academy taking on a Speranza 22. And it's still an invitational game, this, and it's still 0-0 with just under 2 minutes left in it to play, Tom.
Let's start with just sticking with the golf if we can. A lot of chat about Tiger Woods there, but we've got several tournaments ongoing around the world at the moment. Let's get the latest from Mark Archer.
Yeah, the Mauritius Open is taking place in beautiful Mauritius. It's a combination of European Tour, I think the Sunshine Tour from Africa, and some of the Asian Tour as well. And it's the South African Lewis de Jager is currently the tied leader with the Indian player Arjun Atwal. Both players at 13 under par. Round of 67 for De Jager today, and Atwal also shot 68. So 13 under par leads De Jager and Arjun Atwal in the Mauritius Open.
What about the Hero World Challenge? That's where Tiger Woods playing.
Yeah, that is where Tiger Woods is playing, but I can tell you he's not leading, Tom. He's 5 shots off the lead. That tournament is led by Charlie Hoffman. He is on 12 under par. And then, of course, the Race to Dubai winner, Tommy Fleetwood, he's in second at 9 under, tied with Jordan Spieth. Justin Rose at 8 under. And then, of course, Tiger Woods, Ricky Fowler and Matt Kuchar all at 7 under par.
And no surprise that at the RACV Royal Pines Resort in Queensland, Australia, where the Australian PGA Championship is going on, there are a whole host of Aussies at the top of the leaderboard. Mark Archer.
Yeah, it's an Aussie-dominated event. This is the Australian PGA Championship. Jordan Zunick is currently the leader. He's at 17 under par after 3 rounds. Rounds of 66, 69 and 64 for the Aussie. He has a 3-shot lead from Cameron Smith. So it's the Aussie Jordan Zunick leading the Australian PGA. Just flicking down the leaderboard for notable other names. Sergio Garcia, he shot a 2 under par round of 70. He is back in a tie for 7th at 8 under par. Just going a bit further down the leaderboard to see if I can spot any other notable names. Mike Weir, former Masters champion, 1 under par for his tournament. And there we go, Tom. So it's an Aussie-dominated field, of course. It's Jordan Zunick leading a 3-shot lead over Cameron Smith.
Of course, the big name missing there is Australian Adam Scott, missing the cut, shooting a 75. And Adam Scott, former Masters champion, just not on form at the moment.
It is Chelsea who lead Newcastle United. Early kickoff in the Premier League is Chelsea 2, Newcastle 1. No action until 7 o'clock up in Scotland. But it is second round of the FA Cup. Notts County underway against Oxford City. Notts County lead by 1-0 at half-time in that one. And there's also action over in the EFL Trophy as well. Portsmouth taking on Northampton Town. Walsall at home to Bury. It's Portsmouth who lead Northampton by that 1-0. And it's one apiece between Walsall and Bury in the EFL Trophy. Also action over in Spain at the moment. Barcelona in action in a rare early kickoff over in La Liga for Barcelona to be in action with. And it's Celta Vigo over beaten back again. It's Barcelona 2, Celta Vigo 2. 72 minutes on the clock there. Lionel Messi on the scoreboard for Barcelona. But Celta Vigo just equalised in the last couple of minutes. 72 minutes on the clock. Barcelona 2, Celta Vigo 2. We'll take a short break when we come back. More live sport for you.
This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 Sports Special.
Live from the VIP area at the 2017 Emirates Airline Dubai Rugby Sevens. Hashtag Run Wild.
Messi and Suarez for Barcelona. Celta Vigo, though, have equalised through Iago Aspas and Gomez Gonzalez. Gonzalez scoring after 70 minutes. 74 left on the clock. It's Barcelona 2, Celta Vigo 2. What's happening in the Premier League, CVR?
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you is it's the start of the second half at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea taking on Newcastle. An early goal by Dwight Gale put Newcastle in the lead. And then goals by Eden Hazard and Morata. Chelsea currently leading 2-1.
Let's go to the cricket now, because plenty of cricket going on around the globe. Obviously a lot of interest on this day-night match in the Ashes. First time that a day-night test match has been played during an Ashes series. A lot of expectation about the English bowlers to perform with this pink ball under the lights. And yet our swing bowlers, I say our, the English swing bowlers, haven't really got the ball talking down in this match yet.
Yeah, they've said from the start that this would be the test match that England should definitely target to win. Most English-like conditions overnight, the pink ball does tend to swing a bit, but I think they'll be a bit disappointed after their day's work at the Adelaide Oval after day one. Joe Root won the toss, elected the bowl first. Some will say that's a negative move by Joe Root, but they do have to find a way to get 20 Australian wickets to win this test match and get back in the series. Stumps score at the Adelaide Oval. Australia, it was a rain-interrupted day. I think they left the field at least three times and came back and rain did interrupt play. So at Stumps, Australia, 209 for 4. It's delicately poised. England would have wanted to pick up a couple of extra wickets to really take advantage of winning the toss and bowling first. Wickets to fall today. Bancroft run out for 10. David Warner caught Bairstow, bowled Wokes 47. Usman Khawaja caught Vince in the gully, bowled Jimmy Anderson for 53. And the key wicket, not long before Stumps, was Stephen Smith, the Aussie captain, the vital century that he scored in the first test match, bowled by the debutant Craig Overton for 40. Now, it's the first time in 2 years that Steve Smith has been bowled in a test match. Amazing stat that. Amazing stat that. So at Stumps, it's Peter Hamscombe, 36 not out, Sean Marsh, 20 not out. Massive, massive first session tomorrow for England. They need to find a way of trying to dismiss Australia for under 250 and getting back into the test series, because one feels, Tom, if they do go 2-0 down in the series, it could well be 5-0 by the end of the summer.
Talk to me about Sean Marsh back into this test team. What is he, 33 34 33?
No. Been dropped and come back and been dropped and
eighth
come
time
back.
That he's been recalled, and yet he looks to be much more of a complete player this time around.
Yeah, he's been sort of stereotyped as being a T20 specialist and a one day specialist, and he's been given a lot of opportunities. Some say there's a little bit of nepotism there, being the son of Jeff Marsh, the former Australian opener and coach and selector, but he's been given the opportunities, and he chipped in with a pretty valuable knock in the first test match. That partnership with Steve Smith got England got Australia sort of in the dominant position. He's 20 not out, so he'll be feeling under pressure there. But you know, they've talked about the swing bowling of Jimmy Anderson and Stuart Broad having to take these wickets, dominate the proceedings. Well, you know, the Aussies don't have a bad swing bowling attack either. You know, who's going to dominate these positions, these test match conditions? So let's wait and see. Again, after day one, the match is delicately poised. Let's see what the weather does tomorrow. England really need to find a way of dismissing, taking these last sort of six wickets, keeping Australia under 300, give themselves a target that they can go out and chase and try and get a first innings lead and put some pressure. They will have to bat last now on the wicket, and we'll see how the wicket holds together. So I know Mitchell Starc was wanting to have a bowl on this fast Adelaide Oval surface and under lights and see what he can do when you're bowling at 95 miles an hour with that swinging Yorker that he's got. Let's see how the English batsmen handle that. And a lot of pressure on Joe Root and Alistair Cook to lead from the front, the experience there. Of course, England without Ben Stokes, who's now playing cricket in New Zealand, only 3 hours away on standby for my old domestic bunch in Canterbury. So it's an interesting development that. But a lot of pressure on that middle order, the vaunted middle order of England, where Johnny Bairstow, Moen Ali got England out of trouble a lot in recent years. They're missing Ben Stokes. Their batsmen really have to step up. Someone has to go on and get some big hundreds for England to get back in the series, Tom.
Tom, I hate to say it, but didn't you say this was going to happen with Ben Stokes? I think you predicted third test match should be back in.
But from what I'm hearing, from what I understand as well from sources there, that Ben Stokes is not going to get recalled at any point during this series. The reason being, they don't want to call what they've termed a Stokes circus, which I find bizarre because there already is a Stokes circus, and if Ben Stokes isn't creating a circus, you can pretty much guarantee that one of the other players is creating a circus. Or, you know, not through their own faults or anything like that. It's just the Australian media around an Ashes series demand some sort of circus, you know. And we saw that at the end of the last match where Davey Warner's picked up on a stump mic, and all we've talked about since then is Johnny Bairstow headbutting Bancroft.
I do want to get your thoughts on this because I know you know Johnny Bairstow well. I've met him a number of times during test matches, and he's been a very nice gentleman to spend time in his company. But is it a mountain out of a molehill? There's not much behind the story. Is Johnny just having a bit of a laugh, and that's all it was, and the Aussies found something to talk about and make an issue out of nothing?
It's a complete mountain out of the molehill, and it's a very clever little move by Davey Warner and the Australians, because it takes the focus away from them and gives the media and everyone else something to talk about in the lead-up to the next match. I mean, there is nothing about it. It wasn't reported at the time. Reg Dixon, the security officer, was out with the England team at the time. The Australians haven't complained about it. Johnny's not complained about it.
He hasn't been fined. He's been under a bit of warning, Johnny Bairstow, for some things that happened. But again, it puts the spotlight on England being social, being out and about on the town.
This culture that they're meant to have.
And particularly after the Ben Stokes incident, obviously the spotlight is in on the extracurricular activities of an England team. And I guess the team management, Trevor Bayliss, Joe Root, it's the last thing they need really to deal with a non-issue, which has become an issue because of the Australian media.
One thing that I will find interesting, I think, I don't think we'll see Ben Stokes called into the test team at any point. I find it very strange that he's gone down to Canterbury to play.
Why do you find it strange, though?
I find it strange that he's gone. I mean, I can understand them wanting him to be match fit, to continue to play.
Well, how can he be match fit? He's got to play cricket to be match fit.
Indeed.
So he's got to play somewhere.
But that's what I mean.
But he can't play in England, can he?
But what I don't understand is that, I haven't got anything wrong with it. It just seems that if he's under so much trouble at the moment over in the United Kingdom, why he's allowed to travel in the first place? If it's that
he hasn't been charged with anything.
I know, exactly.
So why can't you travel if you haven't been charged with anything?
So why is it therefore being made an issue by the ECB at the moment? If he's free to travel, if the money hasn't been charged, why is he not on tour with England?
This is the exact question that I'm asking, and I thought maybe they put him down in Canterbury, as you say, he's only a three-hour flight away, gets his eye in a bit, gets him in
match fit. No, it's his choice. It's got nothing to do with them. He's made that choice.
No, they do have a say, because they can give a non-objection. They have to give a non-objection certificate to play.
That's right.
Ben Stokes is an employee of the ECB. When he goes and plays, he's still under the employment. He's contracted to them. If he wants to go and play cricket somewhere else, they have to approve it. They have approved him going to play cricket in Christchurch for Canterbury in the first-class competition. He's playing in a one-day competition. Now, the fact of the matter is, his parents live in Christchurch. Ben Stokes was born in Christchurch. He has lots of family there. That's actually where his family live.
Yeah, I know.
He's gone to see his family, probably get out of the spotlight of, in some ways, even though the spotlights follow him down to New Zealand, get out of the spotlight of the English media to deal with the situation. Now, they're still waiting to find out whether they're going to press charges or not. And all they're doing is playing some decent cricket. He's got to go somewhere out of the UK, out of the Northern Hemisphere, to play some cricket. He's doing that. He was in the nets at Durham. He's gone down to New Zealand. He's going to play a match tomorrow, I think, a one-day match. And he's keeping match fit, but he's spending time with his family. He's down there for Christmas. He will not get called up to the Test Series. He hasn't played first-class cricket for about 4 months. He may get called up if this whole situation finds itself being resolved. And I think it's got a bit more to go yet before there's any resolution in the whole whole disciplinary proceedings and the police pressing charges. But he may get called up to the one-day series. Of course, in England, actually go from Australia to New Zealand to play a test match and a one-day series. So in some ways, it's a relatively smart move by him. The question is, ethically, you know, you ask the ECB, should he's banned from or suspended from playing for England, should they have let him go on and play somewhere else? Well, they've approved it, so why not go and play somewhere else?
What's going to be interesting, though, and what I predict will happen here, is that, okay, he's playing in Canterbury, he's keeping match fit, he's keeping in tune for the new season. Yeah, quite right, too. Why wouldn't you? That's what he does for a living. After all, he plays cricket. You can guarantee he's going to be picked up by a franchise for the Big Bash, which takes place in Australia during the Ashes series.
Only if the ECB grant him approval to go and do that. And
why wouldn't they? If he's in Canterbury anyway.
Because I don't think they'll want him to see him playing cricket in Australia when there's an Ashes series going on. That is a big distraction. So I can't see the ECB granting him approval to go play in the Big Bash. Look, he's a very wealthy cricketer. He's a young man at 26. He's a multimillionaire now through IPL and these competitions. He doesn't need to go play in the Big Bash. I don't think the England ECB will release him to go and do that. That then becomes a distraction. He's in Australia playing domestic cricket. Then the question is, why aren't you playing for the Ashes? I know we asked him why he's not in New Zealand. Look, he's got family there. He's probably expecting to spend Christmas and New Year there. But we're waiting to find out on this police situation back in Bristol or back where the situation is. Will they press charges? Let's wait and see, because that's supposed to happen within the next 2 weeks. Then the situation will become a bit clearer. He may have to fly back to the UK to deal with the police situation, the ongoing investigation.
Meanwhile, Virat Kohli continues to score tons of runs.
What a machine. His third consecutive test 100 there. And haven't India been dominant against Sri Lanka in this test series?
Well, what's happened to Sri Lanka cricket as well? It's like they haven't turned up for this series.
It's almost like Sri Lanka playing India every week in a test match. And not doing very well either. But day one...
Must be soul destroy, mustn't it?
Virat Kohli, he must just be batting for fun every week. He's 150 not out, but that's exactly what he is today, 156 not out. India at stumps on day one of this third test match, 371 for four. Murali Vijay also filled his boots. He scored 155. Virat Kohli, 156 not out, his third consecutive test century. He is an absolute run machine, old Virat Kohli.
What I find so impressive about India, and I know India playing in Indian conditions is one thing, but what I find impressive about them is, unlike other teams where you seem to find one batsman goes large, India, if one batsman goes large, it seems that the number of times that you have multiple batsmen scoring centuries in that Indian batting lineup is astounding.
They do cash in when they get a chance, don't they? And, you know, it's conditions, subcontinent cricket conditions, that are also quite favourable for Sri Lanka. But the Indian bowlers seem to have the upper hand there when they're bowling to the Sri Lankan batsmen. But Virat Kohli, you think he'd get bored of scoring runs. You think it becomes too easy. And it's a highly motivated cricketer that can go out and tune out hundreds after hundreds after hundreds. You think the Indian selectors would want to give him a rest, give someone else an opportunity, maybe rest some of their senior batsmen, prepare for some other big series. But I think India head down to South Africa shortly for a series. Now, that is very important because India playing at home is a very different team to India playing particularly on hard, fast, bouncy wickets of South Africa. And their pace attack will come at them a lot and give them a lot more different questions than they'll receive against the Sri Lankan bowlers. So Virat Kohli, can he continue this form throughout the summer? Well, let's wait and see. Let's hope so. Had an interesting debate during the week, Tom, about the three or four big captains in world cricket. Who is the better player? Steve Smith, averaging 60 in Test cricket. If he finishes his career averaging 60, that is a wonderful achievement. Is it Joe Root, who averages over 50? Is it Virat Kohli, the better player? Is there Kane Williamson in there? And then you throw in the likes of Hashim Amla and AB de Villiers. Who is the best batsman in world cricket currently? And I'll throw it open to you or open to listeners. Do you go with Steve Smith averaging 60 in Test cricket, or do you go with Virat Kohli, who averages over 50 in Test cricket, over 50 in One Day Internationals, and over 50 in T20 Internationals? Every format of the match, Virat Kohli averages over 50. He also has to deal with the pressure of captaining India. He has to deal with playing in the high-pressure competition like the IPL. So is Virat Kohli the number one batsman in the world, or do you go with Steve Smith averaging 60 in Test cricket?
I go with Virat Kohli, and I go with Virat Kohli for a reason. If you look at where he scores his runs, all around the field. If you look at Smith, where he scores his runs, majority of the runs are scored on the onside. It's very rare until he bats late and deep into his innings that he starts scoring fluidly on the offside. Virat Kohli, just from the aesthetics, is a more attractive batsman to watch and therefore more entertaining.
But your aesthetics don't read on your average, do they? It doesn't say he averaged 60 playing ugly, or he averaged 55 with a beautiful player. So,
mate, he's done it in three formats. In three different formats. I think you've answered your own question.
The question mark that comes up time and time again against Virat Kohli is, has he scored the big runs in, say, English conditions, or has he scored them in Australia, or has he scored them in South Africa?
But the same way could be said about Smith as well, because
he averages 60 in Test cricket. If Steve Smith finishes career averaging 60,
look at
top three players of all time.
Look at Smith's average in England. in the swinging conditions. Yeah, he scored big in other parts of the world, but if you're going to throw that argument back at us about playing in certain conditions, he's been found out in England in the past.
Yeah, as Virat Kohli has. So I guess the trick is having, but to average 60 over a career, I mean, I think they both played 54, 55 test matches. To average over 50, but average over 60 in test match cricket is phenomenal.
I find it extraordinary, and the fact that he is captain as well, so he's got the added responsibility and the added all the other pressures that come along with that, to do it around the world and to do it, you know, just so regularly as well. And you've seen it with England at the moment, haven't you? It's not us. It's not the England bowlers getting him out at the moment. It's him getting himself out. And that could be said, I think, for a lot of the Australian batsmen in this series.
Yeah, it's like we said today. He was dismissed, bowled. It was his first bowled dismissal in 2 years. Test cricket, Steve Smith. And he's a guy that when he bats, you think, it's just a moment of time before he gets out. It looks like a walking wicket at times. But he's so good. He walks across the stumps. He tricks the bowler into bowling straight. And he just works him on the onside and just keeps working away and working away and working away. And you think the bowlers, with all their technological sort of video equipment, can figure out a way of bowling to him, but his hand-eye coordination is phenomenal, and Steve Smith averaging 60. So we did have a very interesting debate midweek on Sports Tonight, trying to work out, if you were picking a cricket team, test match team, Robbie wouldn't tell me where they were playing, who's your first pick as your batsman? Who do you pick, first name on the paper? I was a fan of Kohli. I think Kohli scores a lot of runs, pressure in second innings, chasing totals, particularly in short forms of cricket, T20 and ODI, but he does score hundreds in both innings, whereas I think Steve Smith, big 100 for Australia when they're in trouble in the first innings, took them out of sight in key moments for Australia. So it's really tough to pick between Kohli on one hand, Steve Smith, and then you've got the likes of Joe Root, who's got a fantastic record at Test cricket as well, and then they've got the youngsters like, you know, sort of Kane Williams, four great young players who are all captains of their respective countries.
Meanwhile, over in the other series that we just need to touch on, West Indies against New Zealand, same old, West Indies have turned up and they've brought the wrong team with them, haven't they? Because 134 all out, flattering to deceive on this one. It's one of these age-old problems with West Indian cricket. At one moment they can be utterly superb and be take any team to the cleaners on their day, and then they turn up and score 130 in favourable conditions.
Yeah, this was down at the Basin Reserve in Wellington, and dismissed for 134, batting first to West Indies. Neil Wagner, ex-South African, one of your lot, Carlos, qualified for New Zealand, took a career best, 7 for 39, the fourth best New Zealand test bowling figures ever of all time. So congratulations to Neil Wagner. And then New Zealand, 447 for 9 at stumps. You know, a makeshift middle order, Colin de Graham, I think is another South African background, went and scored 105 off only 74 balls.
Carlos is just rolling his eyes. Yeah.
you can make a world 11 with just the South African players playing for England and New Zealand.
There you go. So New Zealand, you're firmly in control after 2 days taking on the West Indies in New Zealand conditions. But yeah, the West Indies, never know what you get, but it looks like they haven't turned up on tour yet in this match.
Some interesting names in that New Zealand lineup at the moment as well. Obviously, taking advantage of this series to blood a few of the youngsters as well. Some names I haven't really seen in there. Raval coming in, number two for them. Obviously, Williamson then has been around for a while after that. So you've still got that experience of Williamson and Taylor in the mid-order. But some new names like Raval, Nichols, Santner's back in. He's been in and out over the last couple of seasons, hasn't he?
Yeah, he bowls his left arm, but yeah, a bit handy with the bat as well. But there are definitely some new names coming through.
Lundell, who's he? He's a new boy.
Yeah, no, I think he's a wicketkeeper. BJ Watling's injured, so he's a new wicketkeeper on debut. I think he chipped in with some runs as well.
50,
so
yeah.
50 on debut. So fantastic that the Black Caps are blooding a few youngsters, giving some other opportunity. But three test matches ongoing around the world. Tom, it looks so. It's even Stevens over in Adelaide in the first day of the Ashes. Looks like New Zealand and India are firmly in control of their two test matches.
Listen, we are broadcasting live from the Emirates Airline Dubai Rugby Sevens. The reason that we're talking cricket, the golf and bits and pieces is there's not a huge amount of action on the main field at the moment. In fact, Robbie Williams is on the main field at the moment.
Yeah, Robbie Williams, he's been on the main field quite a bit today. But Tom, just bring you
not
up to
the
date.
Actual Robbie Williams, I must hasten to add.
Absolutely. just to bring you up to date with rugby happening around the world, we've had one kickoff in the top 14. It's Montpellier taking on Lower Shoal. It's 3-3 there at the moment. Zebre taking on Connacht Eagles. They are leading 3-0. Exeter take on Bath. That kickoff is at 6 o'clock. Gloucester, your team, Tom, doing so well under Jan Ackerman. They're playing London Irish at 7 o'clock. And then the late one is Wasps taking on Leicester Tigers. And Wales taking on South Africa. That kickoff will be at 6:30.
Wales, South Africa, 6:30. It's going to be an interesting one, isn't it? We had all the chat, didn't we, about Bundiaki at playing for Ireland in recent weeks. Wales have got their own problem this time around as well, isn't it? Is it Hadley Parks? Hadley Parks
played for the Blues 3 years ago, and he's playing for Wales on his third, the exact day of his 3-year residency. He's made debut
today
for Wales.
Yeah.
So, but there's been a few players, I think, a few kilted Kiwis or rocked up either playing for Wales or Scotland over the past few years. But I think Wales with some injury problems. Interesting to see this match falls outside the window, the international autumn international window, which is given for 3 or 4 weeks. It almost seems like a bit of a bit of an afterthought. We had the big matches over the last 3 weeks, and South Africa now taking on Wales. A lot of key internationals not being released by their clubs, whether it be in the Premiership or the South African players staying in France or with their club side. So it just seems a bit of a letdown, a bit of a non-affair, really. But I guess it's an international match. There's plenty to play for, young players given a chance, and let's wait and see what happens. Carlos, are you thinking a big match for South Africa?
Yeah, I think South Africa's under so much pressure. Week by week, the pressure just mounts, more and more on South Africa. They made a couple of changes to the team. We see Warren Galland coming in on the wing. He replaces Skorson. Frans Venter's at inside centre with Jesse Krul. And then, of course, as you said, Arch, the club players are not available. So we see Dwayne Vermeulen, and he's gone back to Toulon. He's replaced by Daniel Dupree. And then Peter Steph de Toer has moved on to the flank as Francois Lowe is back at Bath this afternoon. So I think it's going to be quite a tight one, but I do fancy Wales for this.
Why is a player like Quagga Smith not part of that Springbok squad? Obviously, he had a great season with the Lions, played some test match rugby for the Springboks during the year, was the man of the match a month ago for the Barbarians against the All Blacks at Twickenham, played a fantastic match. And he's here playing for the Blitbox, which is great, but surely the greater calling is, you think a guy like him would be part of that Springbok squad, or is he, how does it work?
That's the exact reason for why I'm asking for the coach to be replaced, in all honesty. You've got a talented guy, not taking anything away from the Sevens, but playing Sevens rugby when I feel he could be a great contributor to the 15-man team. And as you say, South Africa have really been struggling, and I think he would be, a great addition. But, that's the selectors, and I think the South African coach, what I'm reading in reports is that, if it doesn't pull off a win today, it might be the end of him. So let's see what happens.
Zebra Leave Connaught by 3 points to nil in the early kickoff in the Guinness Pro 14. Benetton against Ulster has been postponed. Benetton do play Leinster a little later on today. Munster in action against Ospreys, and Cheetahs taking on the Scarlets as well. So a lot to look forward to in the Guinness Pro 12. A lot to look forward to down here at the Emirates Airline Dubai Rugby Sevens. In fact, action back underway on the main pitch where we've got the playoff finals for 13th place now. Wales in action against Uganda. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll have more live from the Sevens, but we'll also be talking to Adam Bridge ahead of the Brighton game against Liverpool later on this evening. We'll speak to Adam, our Match Day commentator, after these.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.